lights out on the hour. It is the hour of the time. Lights out for the curfew of your body, soul, and mind.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Tonight, Thursday, the 24th of June, 2010. Now, I want to thank all of you for tuning in. You can thank yourself for what you're going to learn this evening. But first, the contact information. If you'd like to write the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time, or HOTT, H-O-T-T. P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com, that's hourofthetime.com. The studio number in Arizona, 928-333-2942. That's 928-333-2942. And the studio in Canada, 613-733-4324. 613-733-4324. Now, for those of you who would like to inquire with serious questions or share research or comments or just send hate mail, you can email me directly at hourofthetime@hotmail.com. hourofthetime@hotmail.com, and I will check out your comments or sundry spillings or hate or whatever you want to send. Now, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into part five of If an Agent Comes Knocking in our series, wrapping up a lot of the information on cell phones, smartphones, PDAs, texting, and the very real security threats there to you, to those of you that use these items all the time. Also, what some of the courts have ruled in general in a lot of these areas about what is obtainable and what isn't by agencies or representatives thereof. Now, you're going to want to take lots of notes, ladies and gentlemen, because it'll help you out immensely when you go back and study all this, because over a duration of time of even a week and a half like this, and just five or six different hours spread over that week and a half or 2 weeks, there's a lot of information you can lose the finer points to. That's why the notes are so important. So be sure to do that, ladies and gentlemen, and don't forget, the Hour of the Time is listener-supported. And through your support, through donations, is how we maintain our presence and our research and continually expand our operation and do speaking engagements out there and travel to and from the speaking engagements, which is typically just me driving myself. But there's paper, ink, phone, all of the sundry items that go along with running any operation. And we are listener supported. Now, a lot of the so-called patriots, PAY patriots out there, they'll inundate you with commercials every 4 minutes and spread a lot of rumors, infotainment, as they even call themselves. Now, that's fine if you want that type of thing, but if you want solution-oriented programming, then come to the Hour of the Time. This is where we acknowledge the fact that solutions are the only thing that's going to restore all our freedoms in our republic. So to do that, you and us, all of us together, need to have as many facts as at all possible and solutions offered to help us attain those goals. And that's a very hard task, ladies and gentlemen. It's real easy when you have rip-off coins and rip-off magical cures and all that advertising all the time on your air, breaking up your programming, because you can break up unintelligent programming. It really doesn't matter. It's just when you're just blathering on and pimping your DVDs and whatnot and yelling out on a bullhorn. But it's not feasible with our solution-oriented approach here at Hour of the Time. So we go commercial-free. And go to the website, hourofthetime.com, and then go to the Hot Shop. And there you'll see the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of MP3s available as a mix-and-match assortment of whatever you want, or topical series, PDF book and research collections, as well as the video presentations, all there and available to you. And that's a great way for you to get something usable in your hands at the same time as helping the Hour of the Time with our operation. Now, one thing I would like to stress is that the First Aid DVD is one of those that right now, right now we've been pushing heavy, because I see that a lot of people out there are lacking in that area of knowledge with the first aid and the ability to treat victims around them or even themselves. So those skills are quite handy and going to be used a lot down the road. So that's just one example. And if you want to study the more esoteric and the mystery schools, etc., you could look to the Wiseman by John Daniel. That DVD presentation, a huge package. Maybe go to Extreme Human Antiquity by Michael Cremo. Behold a Pale Horse by Bill Cooper, obviously. So there's a whole variety of presentations there, but be prepared, ladies and gentlemen, to take notes after this musical break, and we'll continue on tonight with part 5, and If an Agent Comes Knocking, tonight, Thursday, the 24th of June, 2010.
Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen. Again, your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. Tonight, Thursday, the 24th of June, 2010, with If an Agent Comes Knocking, Part 5. Now, we left off discussing, ladies and gentlemen, how your cell phone is used as a tracking device, and especially in cities and other areas of high population density, where there's multiple towers available, the tracking can be conducted much more precisely, sometimes within a few yards, just a handful. And there is currently also no current legislation preventing that or stopping anybody from doing those techniques. Now, some courts, as we were telling you, require agents to meet the same very low standards or showing needed to obtain a PIN register or a trap and trace device, while other courts have required agents or representatives of any agency to obtain a warrant supported by probable cause, kind of like a Title III wiretap order. And we also told you how an agency and their representatives can also determine your location at the time by going through past records of your cell phone calls as long as your phone was turned on. Now, one thing that courts, some courts that is, have held is that once you're arrested, law enforcement with a warrant can search your call history and contacts stored within your cell phone. And some courts have even held that after a lawful arrest, agencies can go through and search text messages, pictures, emails, any other records contained on your cellular phone. So think about that, ladies and gentlemen. And some courts, allow law enforcement agencies or their representatives to search call histories without a warrant whatsoever, with the argument that the call history will yield the same information that can be obtained by a PIN register, but require a warrant for searching text messages or emails. So there's multiple ways that agencies and their agents have worked around every little rule and protection out there for you. Okay, now of course, you see this whole area of law still developing. There's been several good court cases where carte blanche across the board, anything in the cell phone arena has to have all the full warrants and probable cause issues to look into any of the records. Okay, so that is changing constantly, and those are some stunning victories coming out of various courts over the past, anywhere from 3 months to a year. In fact, several of these, meaning that your cell phone and all your property was still protected, or more so protected again. But then you look at just a week ago when a cop and brought up a case that brought in also not just his own situation, but brought about judgment upon the employer going to employee realm of searching past emails, phone calls, text, any of that. And the court ruled that the employer could do it without any warrants. It wasn't illegal whatsoever. So it goes back and forth, back and forth. So you got to keep that in mind whenever you're doing any of these activities. Okay? And so really, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, the rules and judge to judge, the rules are really wide open. So there's a lot of area for broad interpretation by the agencies. Now, one of the things recommended by privacy advocacy groups and courts, even in cases, has been that any of your password protection options be enabled on any device impossible that you can do it to. Cell phones, PDAs, it doesn't matter, okay? Laptops, because then they just don't walk in and say, oh, we got it, and, well, we didn't mean to, sorry, we thought we could, because it was on your person when we lawfully, as they call it, arrested you. Just don't even give them access to it, okay? Because then what's going to happen is when, at least in most circumstances, when they can't just easily browse through all your records, they're going to have to somehow compel you, as in a court order, to go through it. So at least it makes them go through those other steps, and they can't just do it on a mad dash before they let you go because they don't have anything on you anyway. See, because maybe you're on your way out quite quickly because you've held your ground and there really is nothing substantive against you and you cannot be detained any longer. It doesn't take them long, though, to search through a lot of those records while you're sitting in some room and they're brooding over how they can hold you for longer. Now, another area, again, is the text messaging. You can't get over this enough. I see people use it incessantly, and I find it quite ignorant, actually, that they feel they have to constantly text people they know around them. If you're that important, maybe you should have your own country or corporation. But I've noticed that most people that do that constantly aren't that important. I don't know what they do is they put out a huge amount of data out there that's ripe to be collected because of being ignorant. Okay? Everything from when your next appointment is to when you're getting together to what you just saw down the street to what so-and-so just said. And these are great tools for agencies to use all this blather and data and gibberish that people throw around out there like idiots in their text messaging. It creates wonderful dossiers, and I hope that when you do this incessantly, you realize that you are only working for people that are against freedom and your privacy. You're helping them, okay? So I hope you feel good about yourself when you send out all sorts of info that's really nobody's business, okay? Text messages are easily intercepted by anyone, okay? This doesn't have to be in the agency realm. Anybody with a few hundred dollars can do this, okay? Buy the equipment to do so, okay? It's one of the most incredibly insecure methods of communication in existence on purpose, okay? And Congress nor the courts have been clear about whether probable cause or warrants are required to intercept text messages at all. So agencies just do it. They just intercept them. They use various tools, PIN registers, trap and trace orders, which we already have shown you are relatively easy to obtain. Okay, now, text messages are also not considered wire communications. So they're not protected by the exclusionary ruling of the Wiretap Act either. Okay? So even if an agency or a person illegally intercepted your text messages, because it's not considered a wire communication and protected by the Exclusionary Act of the Wiretap Act itself, those illegal intercepts, guess what, can still be used against you in a trial. So in other words, every time you text, you're helping anybody else with whatever their agenda might be. Now, texting, of course, I think naturally leads us to the next area of some form of written communications that's quite popular today, obviously, and that's email. Okay? Now, agencies can easily access much, if not most, of your electronic communications and the information, of course, contained therein. To obtain a subpoena, for instance, to access your electronic communications, an agency need only to demonstrate that the information likely to be obtained is relevant to some ongoing investigation. And with the subpoena, the government can obtain your basic subscriber information, as they call it, which is the name, physical address associated with the account, the links and types of services used, session logs, and all the IP addresses of computers you use. Now, there is other non-content records as they've been defined. Non-content records. Okay? Those would be any records or logs that reflect the email addresses you send emails to or receive emails from, for instance, times and dates on which emails were sent or received, and the size of each email. Okay? Now, all of these typically, mind you, is the word, need a D order, okay? A D order. D like the letter D, okay? This is just another tool, ladies and gentlemen of agencies. It's technically a 2307 D order, or just referred to as a D order itself. And it gets its name, obviously, from the subsection of the Stored Communications Act that authorized them. The agencies will use D-orders to obtain electronic records stored by third parties, most often email. D-orders are harder to get than a simple subpoena, but easier than a search warrant. Okay? To obtain a D-order, an agency must provide, or an agent thereof, specific facts to a judge showing there are reasonable grounds to believe, reasonable, mind you, grounds to believe the information sought is relevant to an ongoing criminal investigation. So the suspicion required for a D order is lower than probable cause, but it is higher than the standard of any reasonable possibility in the case of a subpoena. Okay? So most people haven't even heard of D orders, but that's what it is. Again, it simply got its name from the subsection it's in of the Stored Communications Act that authorized them, 2307D, D as in Delta, D orders. So, since we just mentioned email and items stored by a third party, let's go into that. A web email service or your ISP, Internet Service Provider. Different protections apply depending on how recent an email is and whether or not you have read it. I know that sounds ignorant, but that's the case. As in most of the items in this series, yes, it is ignorant. Yes, it isn't. It's the color of law at best, or outright despotic treason, but it's there, and we're just trying to fill you in, ladies and gentlemen, on the facts. Now, the Stored Communications Act required agencies to obtain a search warrant for the content, subject line and body, that is, of unopened emails that have been in storage for less than 180 days. For unopened emails older than 180 days, or for opened emails in storage by the third party, the government can simply obtain a D order or issue a subpoena for the content of the emails, and we've already told you how easy that is. Or the agency could also choose to get a search warrant for emails older than 180 days or opened emails in general. Okay? So they've got the whole thing divided up as if an email that's unopened that's 179 days old is different than an opened email that's 180 days old. They have them in completely different venues and different priority levels as far as your privacy is concerned. So again, the Stored Communications Act required agencies to obtain a search warrant for the content, which is considered the subject line and body of unopened emails that have been in storage for less than 180 days. For unopened emails older than 180 days and for opened emails in storage by the third party, the government can get a simple D order or just simply issue a subpoena for the content. Okay? Now, there are some states like Alaska, Arizona, California, Hawaii, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington Guess what? They're the states covered by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And they have, the courts that have, disagreed with the agency's and government's interpretation that it can, with a D order, obtain opened emails that have been in storage for less than 180 days. The Ninth Circuit Court has ruled, so again, those states, Alaska, Arizona, California, Hawaii, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington. They have ruled the government or agencies need a warrant for any email that is less than 180 days old. Any email less than 180 days old. Doesn't matter, open, unopened, whatever. Okay? Now, the agency, mind you, also, when we consider these D orders, D is in Delta, is supposed to give the individual subscriber prior notice before using any D order or subpoenas to obtain the content of emails. And remember, content is subject line and body. Okay? In theory, this would allow the subscriber to move to quash the subpoena before the third party complied with it. Okay? If you were notified, and that was the gist behind that, then you could request the subpoena be quashed before the third party, in this case, like the provider, the web email service, etc., provided it to the requesting agency. You could quash it. Now, another provision concerning all this of the Stored Communications Act, however, allows agencies to delay notice of a D order or subpoena for a substantial period of time. And it appears based on statistics that agencies regularly delay notice. Law enforcement can also avoid giving you any notice whatsoever if they're willing to take the extra steps required to get a search warrant. Okay? The larger internet service providers out there receive around 1,000 subpoenas each month seeking information about their users. Most of the subpoenas, of course, request users' names, addresses, ISP addresses, and records of when the target signed on and off of the internet. Okay? Just so you know, thousands of subpoenas a month. And we already told you the ease at which those are obtained and the fact that if your notice is slightly delayed, then the information may have been provided by the ISP itself before you ever had the chance to even quash that subpoena. And of course, the law enforcement programs that are designed even to capture vast amounts of internet traffic that include emails and web activity. Now, unfortunately, to a great extent, the extent itself, in fact, of these programs, their use and the admissibility of the information obtained through them in court is, you could essentially say, currently unknown. Because it truly has been wide open, based jurisdiction to jurisdiction, judge to judge, kind of which way is the wind blowing today, rulings, and most of it done in private, secret courts with no public disclosure. Okay? Now, theoretically, since we'll get into some, we're on the web, etc. right now, an agency needs a warrant for records of the actual websites that you visit. Okay? The URL, that Uniform Resource Locator, addresses. Now, the government can obtain these of websites that you viewed without a warrant. But, theoretically, agencies need a warrant to obtain information on concerning the specific pages and times that you visited on a website. For instance, okay, without a warrant, they know that you came to hour the time. It would take a warrant, theoretically, for them to know that you then clicked on the hot shop, and then went to the shopping cart, and then went to the audio special series page, and then went to the Survival or Minuteman or Tactics or PsyOps series to support our listener-based, listener-supported programming. So the first view, yes, they know you went there without a warrant. Theoretically, they have to get a warrant to see which pages you viewed in there, in this example, to see that you supported the operation here through a donation. So that is how it's done. That is why we've always have had, and it's clearly on the website, I guess people seem to have the inability to do any reading or research in general whatsoever. You can still, to this day, and we've never not allowed it, mail us directly through the post office your orders. Write it down on a piece of notebook paper. I don't care. Some people go in and take screenshots of the items they want and print them out. So they're all pretty with item numbers and descriptions, or they just write it down what they wanted. We've always allowed that. It's clearly on there. And that is why we've always done that. Anything you do on the internet can and will be captured, ladies and gentlemen. So keep that in mind. Now we're going to go to a musical break here and then get into what are termed NSLs, or National Security Letters, and some of the electronic surveillance from NGOs, non-government organizations. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Hour of the Time here with your host, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona. Tonight, the 24th of June, 2010, Thursday. And we are in part 5 of our broadcast series on If an Agent Comes Knocking. Now, ladies and gentlemen, again, don't forget the Hour of the Time is listener supported. And one of those great ways that you can donate and receive something in return every month is through the Hot Club. Go to the website, hourofthetime.com, and go to the Hot Shop. And there you'll find all the details on the Hot Club. It's a wonderful way you get, through your small donation of $40 a month, you get in return at the end of the month, of course, the broadcast from our primetime slot, Monday through Friday, which is 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, an MP3 of each of those, Monday through Fridays, whether it's brand new or a classic rebroadcast or what have you, and a ton of documentation. The offers from the air, documentation use and the programming, etc. So this is a great way for you to amass a excellent, large research library in no time and support the Hour of the Time continually. So keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. Now, what about moving on to surveillance from non-government entities or organizations, NGOs, as they're often called? And actually, privacy advocacy groups or so-called civil rights groups and several categories out there like that, and those in the electronic security industry have found that corporate or private spying is actually a larger industry than government spying when it comes to the purviews of your emails, etc. I know people find that shocking, but it's the truth. Corporations and individuals and groups routinely hire private spies, most of whom are former law enforcement agents, to conduct surveillance of activities who may threaten their interest. Now, it's not just corporations, it's also private groups. And corporate and private spying involves many of the same tactics. Just rummaging through your trash, tapping phones, tapping traces, pins, monitoring internet activity, using infiltrators. And the reason part of the reason why it goes on so much is that corporate and private spying are less likely to be concerned by legal restraints and lawsuits, etc., than somebody at some local police department might be, okay? But it actually is a larger segment of spying and a larger industry of spying gone on by non-government organizations. But that doesn't mean it doesn't end up in some official, so-called, agency's hands. Agencies within the purviews of government operations work with thousands and thousands of NGOs who provide them data on purpose to skew behavior, grant-making abilities, and policies. Simply look at the Southern Poverty Law Center, providing massive amounts, doing the spying on a private basis, but then openly providing it to official agencies. So, strictly by definition, private spying might be much larger. Doesn't mean it doesn't end up in the same agency's hands. Now, a national security letter, as we mentioned before the musical break, that's a tool used by the FBI to secretly demand information about an individual from a third party, such as ISPs, consumer credit agencies, financial institutions, or telephone companies. National security letters require no probable cause or oversight. The FBI only needs to believe the information they seek is relevant to a terrorism or espionage investigation. That's all. And because of the broad definitions of all of that in the wording, it doesn't take much. Now, the National Security Letter Law has a built-in gag rule that prohibits someone who receives a National Security Letter from telling anyone except their attorney that they have received it in the first place. Though, mind you, a recent court ruling found the permanent built-in gag rule unconstitutional. So, its application is obviously unclear and out in la-la land. So, in other words, the FBI can simply use a National Security letter to demand information from any of those broad range of categories and providers of services to you, only believing the information they seek is relevant to a terrorist or espionage investigation. Now, government studies themselves have reported that the FBI issues tens of thousands of national security letters a year, and quite often violates even the minor restraints on their authority to issue the letters. Okay? So it's useless, that gag rule in there. Then, the data from the national security letters is, of course, shared with U.S. agencies and their agents throughout their little community. Other agencies and foreign governments and corporations even have access to the information from a national security letter. If you or an organization you work with or anybody around you receives a national security letter, you need to get hold of counsel or attorney immediately. Plain and simple, okay? Really quick, okay? Now, speaking of all this, what are some of the tools out there about data encryption and email encryption and passwords and how to go about web browsing? Your internet service providers, data retention policies, like I told you, your group should have clearly written, and its immediate disposal policy, of course, clearly written too. And they're all your anti-spyware and blah, 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 blah. So let's cover some of that. In the field of electronic security, what's most often found out there, it's an immense and complex topic, obviously, electronic security. With the how electronic people's lives have allowed them to become nowadays. All for convenience. Ah, yes. So, these are just some basic areas and advice regarding some electronic securities in this next little section here of the broadcast. You can find a lot more in-depth and some resources that we're going to give you on the air in a future broadcast. Now, what is the most secure electronic communications out there? Okay? Quite simply, it's no electronic communications at all. That's your most secure form. Don't even entertainment. Okay? But you're going to. I know you are. A lot of you aren't going to listen to anything I say. So, you have to be semi-effective with your electronic security by maintaining a balance between convenience and the risk associated with that electronic communication. Okay? Basically, it's just a weighing of risk versus rewards in deciding what security measures you're going to employ. Okay, now encryption is simply a method of turning information to some kind of ciphered code. And I would tell you to go see our broadcast on the art of covered writing. We had two broadcasts concerning that and even a practice skill test for many of you. The very picture posting on the website announcing those broadcasts had encrypted messages in it. Just to see if you wanted to try. And we gave you the code word and how to break the codes and how to make your own, in fact. But it involves the data, the keys, everything we already covered about it, so I'm not even really going to go into that, okay? There are encryption programs, of course, But here are some of the ways around it, just so you know. There are widely available programs to encrypt all the data on your hard drive. Okay? Now, simple passwords to log into your computer are not enough. Why is that? Because an agency can just simply access your hard drive, make a copy of it, and then get all the data without your login. It's plain and simple. And it goes on a lot. Okay? With an encrypted hard drive, your files are at least encoded. And then they have to go through the keys, encryption passwords, encryption types, and all that to get into your data. Okay? Now, of course, encryption programs are also available that allow encryption of individual files and folders even. And it may be easier for you to manage. But there are additional vulnerabilities to all those files because it's a piecemeal type of encryption, if you will. If you have sensitive files, your membership list, your addresses for your organization, that is some kind of community group, activist group, to open up a park and scenic byway and expose some kind of nightmare that's going along there, your best solution is just to keep a fully encrypted hard drive separate for any sensitive files, if you insist on using electronics at all. Your best bet, of course, is, again, as we started, is don't even use the electronic means, okay? Now, when you get into encryption, it's more important on email. Okay, now we've shown how deorders, subpoenas, how easy it really is to access your emails by private groups, NGOs, or agencies. But there are other tools, of course. And once your email is on a third party's computer, you have no control over who can get it and who can read it. That's the simple matter of the fact, okay? That's all there is to it. So, a lot of people go to a data encryption for your electronic communications and email, okay? Email encryption. However, both you and whoever you are communicating with must use an encryption programming to be effective whatsoever. Email encryption must ensure that only the intended recipients can read the email you send. A lot of the modern email encryption works through a system of public keys, as they're called. And a public key provides the instructions or the code for how email sent to you should be scrambled. The code to unscramble messages, and the private key, that is different from the public key. And theoretically, only you'll have access to the private key. So if your emails are intercepted through a subpoena, court order, or otherwise, they cannot be unscrambled without your private key. Now, of course, that can take place too, but that this part of the broadcast is not to describe all the techniques of email encryption. Okay? Now, email encryption, if you want a good gloss over examples, like an open door that can be locked by anyone, but that can only be opened by someone with a special key. I guess that's the best way to explain it, okay? Email encryption has gotten much easier than it was to use in the past. GNU Privacy Guard is a big one, or just GNU PG. That's a big one out there. It's a free program. It can be integrated with most major email programs. Like Mozilla Thunderbird offers a plug-in too, known as a security extension, called Enigmail, that is compatible with GNU PG. And it makes your email encryption fairly easy to do and use. Some people may want to do that all the time concerning your activities. Okay? Passwords are serious items. We mentioned passwords more than once. If you're going to indulge in electronic communications, then have a password. Don't use a word or words with numbers at the end or in the middle. Okay? Use a series of characters that make sense only to you. Don't use the same password twice for any account that has private information. Try to keep your passwords in your head, obviously, but that can be quite difficult. And the reason, like I say, is obvious, because written passwords can be discovered or subpoenaed quite easily. Change your passwords every couple of months. If you do write the passwords down, try to write them in a code only you understand. And if you decide to write down a password, never leave it next to or near your computer. You're better off in your wallet. And this has all been practiced and tried and experimented with by security professionals. Okay? Because obviously someone wanted to get into your computer and your programming that physically has infiltrated is going to look in the vicinity of the computer in question first. Okay? There are things like password safe programs. Okay? Now, what these are for is they are a program that allows you to keep all your passwords in a single encrypted file on your computer. So obviously, you only got to memorize the one password and keys to access all the others, an encrypted file. Password safe, it's sometimes called. And you typically then don't need to write it down because it's only one to remember that protects all the others. Now, also web browsing. The data that your web browser may keep regarding your internet activity and the data that other websites may have about you needs to be carefully managed. Now, as a default, internet browsers keep a great deal of potentially private information. And it's not just singled out to these following items, but they definitely include websites you visit, passwords for those websites, images of the web pages you visited, and an agent who gets hold of your hard drive from an agency or even a private NGO can learn a lot about your internet activity simply from these files. You need to delete this information regularly. Plain and simple. In fact, set your browser to delete your internet browsing history, cache, cookies, download history, saved forms, saved passwords on a regular basis. You may want to do it daily or whenever you close your browser. Whatever it is, you choose. But the more often you do it, the better off you are. And whenever available, try to use a website's built-in encryption when browsing to prevent third parties from intercepting the information transmitted. Now, websites, in general, this is how it works. A website that has built-in encryption starts with https://blah, blah, blah. Instead of http://. Okay. A lot of people also just consider using anonymous internet search tools such as Tor. Okay, that's another. Tor is an encryption and anonymization program that routes your data only through other Tor clients. Encrypting your data along the way and stripping out information regarding where the data originated. Each Tor router only knows the address of the last router it went through. This makes it extremely difficult to trace communication back to its original source. Some drawbacks, of course, to using Tor are slower speeds at which web pages load. Okay? And many unsecured functions such as Flash, Flash Player, you know, do not work over Tor either. So again, you have to weigh all those benefits versus cost if you're going to use electronic communication. Now, of course, your ISP, Internet Service Providers, you need to know the terms of service and the privacy policies of any electronic service you are using or considering using. Now, several that are tailored to so-called political activists provide stronger privacy protections and claim at least to be more resistant to government snooping than others. So you may want to look at that venue for your ISP itself, plus a lot of these other tools we've talked about. It all depends on where you stand and your activities and groups and how you want to do your security. I can only give you the information, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this evening, we're going to wrap up the broadcast here. And again, you were listening to your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. Tonight, Thursday, the 24th of June, 2010. Part 5 in our series, If an Agent Knocks. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is listener-supported. Go to our website, hourofthetime.com. Go to the Hot Shop, and then look there at the Hot Club, individual MP3s, topical series and sets, PDF collections, or DVD presentations. It's a great way, and of course, consider the Hot Club on a monthly basis to support, at the same time, get wonderful research tools into your hands. Now, I want to thank everybody for tuning in this evening again, and I hope you took very good notes, and I hope you have a safe and a studious evening.